Raymond Strother, nationally known Democratic political consultant.
Good morning.
Well, let's start in Georgia, a state you know well. You worked there for Governor Roy Barnes. And last night, Democrat John Ossoff handily won most votes, but he did not win the election. He got 48% in this crowded field that had 11 Republicans to succeed the man, Tom Price, who became Secretary of Health. What does this mean? Does this mean that a Republican will win the seat, or is it going to be a horse race?
It's going to be a very tough race for both sides. You know, the fact that it's easy to say that he got 48.1%, so therefore he only needs 1.9% more votes, but it doesn't work that way. What happened is the Republicans got 52% or, you know, thereabouts, and the Democrats got 48%. That's really what it means, something like that. So all the Republicans are now coalesced behind one candidate, Karen Handel, was the number two person in that field, that crowded field. And it's a new election. I can go on and on about special elections because I've been in a lot of them. But it's not like any other election. It's about turnout. In this first election, the Democrats spent everything they had, I think, on this election. Turnout, on early vote, everything. And they turned out 48% of the vote. Now, the question is that as high as they can go? Is that their vote? How many Republicans will switch over and vote for a Democrat now? Or how many people will vote? I mean, there's so many unanswered questions. It's a brand-new election, Jim. And you can't equate anything that happened before with what's going to happen.
We're hearing the voice of Ray Strother. If you'd like to join the conversation, your number is 877-217-5757. Ray got a man elected governor of Georgia many years ago, Roy Barnes, who was a popular governor for a while, a Democrat, Democrat to be governor of Georgia.
That's right.
And he took down the Confederate flag.
Ooh.
That did him in, didn't it?
I saw him the other day, and I said, "Governor, you tripped over the Confederate flag." And he said, "Yes, I tripped over the Confederate flag, but if I had to walk the same path, I'd trip over the same flag." So he was a man of great courage. He knew what he was walking into when he did it, and he did it against my advice. I said, "Governor, why don't we wait till after the reelect to do this?" He said, "I don't think that'd be honest." Imagine.
Mm-hmm. Well, Georgia is a state very much like Louisiana with a minority voting population, black, of about 30%.
Right.
And it would seemingly be a fertile ground for Democrats. But as we know, in Georgia and in Louisiana, much like Mississippi, whites are voting Republican and blacks are voting Democratic. And right now there are more whites than blacks. So that state, if Ossoff is to win, that would be a big story, wouldn't it?
It would be a huge story. It would be a bad story for President Trump, but it would be a monstrous story. I was looking, I don't know if you've looked at the map of the district, but it's the strangest-looking district. It was a district created to keep a Republican in office, and they reached here and reached there with tentacles in the district to find the right number of votes to make it securely Republican. And so it's amazing that John got 48% of the vote, really, in my opinion. Although Hillary Clinton only lost that by 1.5 votes, that district,
1.5
votes. So something going on there.
Well, it's a district that was once represented by Newton Leroy Gingrich, the pride Tulane University. Raymond Strother, when we look at the South right now, the only Democratic governor in the Deep South is John Bel Edwards. There are no Democratic U.S. senators in the Deep South. Our governor defied the odds 2 years ago and won an election, but as you know, there were special circumstances. Does that mean he's toast when he comes up for re-election in 2 years, or could he somehow, some way, defy the odds again and win re-election?
No, I think he was elected. I think he can get re-elected, and that's just something that's a catalyst for his defeat, like the flag was for Governor Barnes in Georgia. But I think he can be reelected. It'll probably be one of those close races because Louisiana is now a Republican state. There's no question about that. I told Senator Landrieu that a long time ago, that she was very lucky to maintain her seat.
For three terms.
Yeah, for three terms. I thought two was the max because I saw the movement, the change in Louisiana. And Louisiana joined the South is what happened, although Louisiana was one of the last holdouts. Louisiana and Georgia are both some of the last holdouts.
Well, can Donald Trump change that? Just as President Obama, without really trying, he certainly caused a lot of Southern Democrats to lose their seats. Can President Trump reignite the Democratic Party in the South?
Reignite. Oh, so it's reignite. Yeah, I think he can. He's a very unpopular president in most parts of the country. He's still really popular in most of the Southern states. But he's forcing people into their corners. And what I hope doesn't happen is what I've always feared in the South, that we become more and more racially divided, where we become more, even more racist, where people are voting racial instead of issue aligns. And that could happen. He's done nothing to soften that in any way.
Well, going back to 2004, at that time, Louisiana had two U.S. senators who were Democrats. They had a governor who was a Democrat. Every statewide elected official was a Democrat except Fox McKithen, and as we know, he was a moderate Republican.
Right.
And here we are 13 years later, and the only Democrat standing is Governor John Bel Edwards. How did it happen in such a short period of time?
It was all about race, and I know the telephones will light up about this, but it was about race. As soon as Lyndon Johnson passed the civil rights legislation, he predicted that the Democrats would lose the South for a generation. No, he's wrong. We're going to lose the South for a century because people find excuses, but racism is still alive and well in the South, and I've seen it in election after election.
The guest is Raymond Strother. Your number is 877-217-5757. All about race. But was race a factor in Pennsylvania and in Michigan and in Wisconsin this year when Hillary Clinton lost to Donald Trump?
Sure it was. I mean, it was a factor. It wasn't as large a factor as in some places because some of the minority populations aren't as large. But it was a factor there, Jim. It's always a factor in America. And, Pennsylvania. But, you know, race, the Democrats didn't lose Pennsylvania because of race or lose Ohio because of race. I'm fairly confident of that. They lost it because of other factors. That once the Democratic Party just sort of ignored the working people. Remember, our base used to be blue collar. Now our base, the Democrats, and I include myself in that, we're becoming a college-educated group and a group of ethnic minorities. So I can't really say that Pennsylvania, Ohio, particularly Wisconsin, was lost because of race, but it's always a factor.
Ray Strother, when you went to the Beltway to do your deal, how many political consultants were there in Washington, D.C. at that time?
There were three, Jim. Then there were three in New York who were very, very prominent. So it was a wide open field at the time, but political consulting itself had just come into being. When Gus Weil and I were in Baton Rouge, we called ourselves a political advertising agency. We didn't even call ourselves political consultants. So things were just about to change. And so my timing was great.
Yeah, you became a big wheel and handled a lot of people, and you went to one state above us in Louisiana and handled the gubernatorial campaigns of William Jefferson Clinton, and in those years there was an election every 2 years.
That's right. So we spent a lot of time together. There was a little house back behind the mansion I used to stay at quite often, and really developed a fondness for Governor Clinton. I considered him a good friend.
And you got to know Hillary Clinton, and who would have thought that she would become U.S. Senator, Secretary of State, and then almost President of the United States. But she was never popular in Arkansas. In fact, that was evident in this election. She got 34% of the votes in Arkansas. Why did she not do well there and in other parts of the South, including Louisiana, where she received 38% of the votes?
Well, she wasn't even when she was First Lady of Arkansas, she was not perceived as one of them. She was perceived as an outsider. Remember, she went to Arkansas and didn't take the Clinton name at first. She used the name Hillary Rodham, and that didn't sit well with the traditional Southern conservatives. And she was just unlike them. And she did get involved in education in Arkansas and did a great job. But she never fit in well. And so it was normal for her. I mean, it was natural for her to run for senator from New York. She seemed to be a better fit there than she was in Arkansas. But one thing I learned about the Clintons when I was started working for them, Jim, is Bill Clinton was one of the brightest human beings I've ever met. Not politicians, human beings I've ever met, with a photographic memory. And she was slightly brighter than him.
She was that smart.
She was that smart. Is that smart.
Right. Well, yesterday we had a professor from Kentucky, Susan Bordeaux, who's written a book called The Destruction of Hillary Clinton, and some believe that forces beyond her control caused her to lose the election, albeit she won the overall vote by almost 3 million votes. But she lost in the Electoral College by a fairly decisive margin, and she lost by virtue of the fact that she lost three states that had gone to Democrats in every election since 1988, Michigan, Wisconsin, and Pennsylvania. How was she able to lose, especially considering she had such a wounded warrior on the other side in Donald Trump?
You know, there are a lot of people. It's easy to find ways she lost to the reason she lost now after the election's over. But I was hearing rumblings of that. People still talk to me in Washington. You know, you think maybe I've been gone too long, but they still speak to me in Washington. And I was hearing rumblings early on that her campaign was not doing the right things. For example, it was had no message whatsoever. Even 2 weeks before the election, I would ask people, what is Hillary Clinton's message? And they really couldn't tell me. You know, we knew what her opponent stood for, closing the borders, shutting down China's trade in the U.S., et cetera, et cetera. We knew exactly where he was. But we didn't know what she stood for exactly. And you can't win without giving people a reason to elect you other than I am a Democrat, elect me. I am a woman, elect me. That just doesn't work. In fact, she didn't do well with women.
No.
She didn't give them a reason.
She lost white women by 9 percentage points to Donald Trump. And that Hollywood Access tape that came out, I thought that was it, that it was over. I mean, when you look at what happened to Gary Hart, your candidate, and what caused him to lose in 1988 after the 1987 monkey business revelation, and compare that with what was on tape with Donald Trump in his own words, have the times changed, or did Hart just make a mistake by withdrawing and could have somehow, some way, gotten his way out of this mess that he created 30 years ago?
No, we considered every avenue for Hart, and at that particular time in history, he couldn't have gotten back in and won. But what he did was he laid the foundation for Bill Clinton, because Bill Clinton had similar problems later, but people were exhausted from all the sexual adventures of Hart, although there weren't that many compared to Clinton. But even particularly the press, they knew they'd gone too far with Gary Hart, and they kind of slacked up on Clinton. So Gary was doomed. But now when Trump comes along and can get away with what he got away with, all I can tell you is something I teach in my class here early on in propaganda is cognitive dissonance, that people know he's wrong, but they can't admit it to themselves, because if you admit that he's wrong, you're admitting that you're wrong. So the dissonance part of it is that I've got to protect my own beliefs, and so I will continue to protect my belief in Donald Trump. It's complicated, but at this point, he had probably already won the election.
Now, Trump carried all 11 states in the Southeastern Conference,
right,
and that's 150 electoral votes, 150.
Correct.
And you need 270 to win. So
correct.
How can the Democratic Party allow that to happen election after election and continue to be viable in presidential elections?
Well, the truth is, I don't know how the Democrats get back the South. We have to come up with some people like our Louisiana's governor, and perhaps, or people who we have to elect some Southern governors. That's where our strength will start. We have to elect some Southern legislatures. You know, as a party, we ignored the legislatures in the South, well, all over the country. And when you ignore that, you allow Republican legislators to change the districts, the congressional districts. Therefore, you change the House, the composition of the House of Representatives in Washington. So the Democrats have to start all over again. We have to start at the base. We have to start with state legislatures. We have to start with school boards. We have to become a party again. And that's going to be a long process. I don't think that we'll heal the problem in the next 4 years when Trump runs again. However, a Democrat can get elected without the South and may have to.
This is day 90 of Donald Trump's presidency. So he's been in office tomorrow will be 13 weeks, which means about 209 weeks in a term. So what, we got 196 more weeks. It's been a rather active 90 days, Raymond Strother.
You're better at math than I. It's been active, but I can't think of anything he's done. I can't think of any accomplishment. I asked some people that the other day there at a dinner party, because I'm always in hostile territory when I eat dinner with people here in Louisiana. And I said, give me a list of his accomplishments. Well, they said, well, the Democrats stopped him from doing things. I said, look, he has a majority of the House, a majority in the Senate, and he has the White House. Now list his accomplishments. Well, there aren't any.
Well, the Supreme Court Justice, I think he would consider that an accomplishment.
I guess so. You know, I'm trying to ignore that one. But anyway, I guess so. Let's give him the Supreme Court.
But beyond that, it's only been 13 weeks, but he said he would have health care done immediately and it would be easy, and he found out that that was not the case.
He was going to call China a currency manipulator on day one. Well, this is day 90-something, and that hasn't happened. In fact, every single thing he promised, maybe there's some exceptions, he's turned his back on and turned around on, some 180 degrees. Like our foreign adventures, bombing in Syria, he said he wouldn't do that. Well, he did that. So I don't know where he stands on anything. And if America can't decide what he stands on anything, I doubt he can be reelected.
Presidents usually get bumps in their approval ratings after military excursions, and he's
right.
About 40% even after what happened in Syria and the big bomb in Afghanistan. So what's coming next? Some fear an all-out war with North Korea.
Well, I'm worried about that, too. Is there an American so callous that they would start a war to protect their political advantage? I hope not. I hope that isn't the case. But he's going to need something very large to move his numbers, because it isn't going well so far. And in the first 100 days, you should be looking your very best. Obama did. Bush did. And he hasn't.
Phil in Jefferson Terrace, please be brief. You're on the air with Ray Strother. Hi, Phil.
Hi, Jim. And good morning, Mr. Strother. Yeah, my question is, can you talk about Mitch McConnell and what he has done? I think it's kind of describing him as a man who broke America. Thank you.
Yeah, I read that story, The Man Who Broke America. You know what I hearken back to is when I first went to Washington, I represented the masters of the Senate. I represented Senator Russell Long, Senator Lloyd Benson, and later Senator Paul Simon, people who really cared about the institution of the Senate. It was almost a religious fervor. I don't know what they would think today. They would be very upset.
Harkening back to an interview that we did yesterday with Professor Bordos, we had mentioned that Bill Clinton, your former client, carried Louisiana and Kentucky twice in 1992 and 96 by fairly substantial margins, And Hillary Clinton got 38% in Louisiana and 34% in Kentucky. Now, is that a product, the listener asks, of the candidate or of the times? Have the times changed that much in two decades?
Well, it's a combination of both. I think probably the times would be first. I think the candidate, though, was important in the mix. Remember, too, that Clinton was a Southerner, and he was identified as a Southerner, and Southerners liked him, and he had our accent, although it had the Arkansas tinge to it, but he had our accent. But she was a New York senator. She was a New Yorker. She didn't have the same kind of regional appeal that Bill Clinton had. However, remember, too, that she was running for office right behind Barack Obama, who was immensely unpopular in the South. And the work I did in the South in the last part of my career showed that his unpopularity was not necessarily based on what he believed in or where he stood, but was based on race. People had trouble admitting, particularly, I won't characterize, but people had trouble admitting that a black man could be that smart and that appealing. So she came behind that, and it was like they were repudiating Barack Obama as much as they were repudiating Hillary Clinton.
Another listener, Ray, asks, who is the most remarkable Louisiana politician you have worked with?
Well, there have been some really good ones. I'd have to put Russell Long right at the top of it. He, because of a lot of things, was he the best campaigner? No. But he was one of the most remarkable people in American politics for a long time. Now, as far as political skill, pure political skill, I would have to say Edwin Edwards and Buddy Romer. Buddy Romer had the golden tongue and could really move an audience. And Edwin Edwards was one of the best political consultants I've ever known. He understood the people of Louisiana. He knew how to speak to them. And he was one of them. So I think those people, and there have been, as you know, in Louisiana, scores and scores of people I've represented, and there have been a lot of good ones. I don't mean to minimize anyone. Billy Tozan, for example, when he was a Democrat, particularly while I only represented him as a Democrat, but he was one of the brightest men I'd ever run into in public office. So, Billy, I could go on and on, but there are a lot. Louisiana produced a crop of great politicians. Now, at one time, Louisiana led the nation. We were so prominent in Washington, D.C., with Allen Ellender, with Russell Long, with our Congressman Hale Boggs, with Gillis Long. We owned Washington. And we don't now. We're basically backbenchers now. We're not there anymore.
Well, thank you for joining us today. Ray Strother, who is one of a kind and is still doing his thing at Northwestern State University in Natchitoches, teaching a class as we speak. And, Ray, it's always a pleasure. Look forward to visiting with you again soon.
And I tell all my students who are listening, go to class.
Thanks again, Ray.
Thank you.